Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The New Land by David O. Stewart. Narrated by B.J. Harrison. A dream is not a very safe thing to be near. It's like a loaded pistol with a hair trigger. If it stays alive long enough, somebody is going to be hurt. But if it's a good dream, it's worth it. William Faulkner, The Unvanquished. Part 1, 1752. Chapter 1.
You there, John.
It's time. The mate's voice was gruff, roughened by a lifetime of shouting over wind roar and wave crash, but not angry. Johann Oberstrasse nodded without turning. The English always called him John, never recognizing German names.
Yes,
he said to the far horizon, where the slate-gray sky met the blue-gray water.
It is time.
The mate moved away. Even as the deck of the Mary Ann heaved with the march of foam-crested waves, the immensity of ocean and sky had a calming quality. Johann shifted his weight, but didn't leave the ship's rail, pinned by the keening and moaning that rose from the deck below. A wind gust or a snapping sail might cloak those sounds for a few moments, but the undertone of despair always seeped back into his ears. The sounds had started when they were only a few days out of port. Fevers and illness swept through the 70-odd families seeking new lives in America. Deaths introduced an edge of madness, aries of grief breaking out to punctuate the steady recessive of anxiety and fear. After more than a week, with pestilence rendered more lethal by the sea's cold and damp, the passengers knew the rituals of burial at sea. When it came to delivering bodies to their eternal resting places, Johann had more experience than most. Professional soldiers do, if they stay alive. The body must be prepared, often simply rolled in a blanket or a coat. Everyone nearby must pause in respect, head bowed. Even an enemy, when his breath has gone out and his dreams have stopped, commands that respect. There must be words. They can be short and simple, but they must be said. When the silence falls, it must be allowed to linger, but not too long, especially if there are many dead to bury. Then the body is lowered into the earth and covered. At first, the burials on the Mary Ann jarred the passengers. A measured pace marks the lowering of a body into the ground. It takes time to cover it. At sea, bodies plunge overboard, making lively splashes. The separation from the world of the living is sudden, total. No stone marks the lost life. Johann's imagination pictured the bodies drifting down past the monsters of the sea, perhaps dissolving before reaching anything that might be called a resting place. Bits of the person washed by waves into every corner of the globe. Aboard the ship, only a vacancy remains. He straightened and pushed back from the rail. His hair and face were wet. He couldn't be sure if it was spray from the sea or moisture from the sky. His soldier's greatcoat didn't keep out the cold. This was the fifth burial since they left port. It would be the worst. He must shut off his imagination. He must be strong. He had no choice. A sailor with a sour look stepped around Christiana, who was curled in front of a storage chest on the windswept deck. Despite the cold, the sailor was barefoot, the better to scramble up and down the rigging. Christiana clutched baby Valtar, shielding him with her cape. She kept a hand on the bundle next to her, wrapped in a frayed blanket, sewn shut on three sides. Her eyes didn't meet Johann's. Her face was set, as terrible as he had ever seen it. It showed nothing and everything. The mate returned with a Bible. He said something in English, but the wind tore away the words before Johann could hear. Johann had learned that language while serving with the British in the Dettingen campaign, when the English king rented the Landgraf's army for his war. That's when Johann learned that the English would never know his name, would always call him John. They had no feel for German, no need to know it. On the Marianne, he conveyed messages from the German passengers to the crew and back again, so he knew more of the people in both groups and more about them than he cared to know. In the army, the more that people knew about you or thought they knew, the more trouble they could cause. Nungesser, the schoolteacher, stepped forward. Not a preacher, but a literate man and a godly one, he acted like a preacher on the Marianne. There was no other, and the grim days required someone who knew the Bible and could be patient with grieving souls. Nungesser even knew a little English. Leaning over to speak directly in Johann's ear, he said,
I will read something short in German.
Johann had said words over comrades and over men he fought against. Never for a child. Never for his child. Johann crouched next to Christiana. When she looked up, the feeling rushed back. Not until Johann left the army did he come to know Peter, then nearly three. He was such a little fellow, at first shy of Johann, but soon trailing behind whenever he could. The fever had been too much for him, so God took him. Johann could see no use that God could have for such a small one. Christiana's eyes filled. She had so many tears. He placed his hand against her cheek. She looked down and nodded. Tall, blonde Fritz Bauer stood on the other side of the blanket that held Peter. They would hold that bundle between them. The Bauers had lost their youngest in the weeks in the Netherlands, waiting for the ship. Nothing to do but worry while spending their little money. Fritz and his wife, Ursula, buried their little girl in a soggy, unfamiliar land they would never see again. At least she was in the ground, her place marked. Johann didn't look at the others gathered around the railing. Some had stayed below, too ill to come or too busy nursing the sick. The sailors hung back. Nungesser stood at the rail. He turned to the people. He had the slouch of a tall man. After clearing his throat, he asked the forgiveness of the Almighty for their sins. He asked Jesus to care for the blameless dead, like Peter, and to bring them greater peace than they knew on earth. He asked the Lord to bring peace to his people on the Marianne. He led the Lord's Prayer. Then Nungesser opened his Bible and read a passage from Exodus, one the passengers had repeated since the burials began. Behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were sore afraid. And the children of Israel cried out unto the Lord, and they said unto Moses, Hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt with us, to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, Let us alone, that we may better serve the Egyptians. For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness.
And Moses said unto the people, Fear ye not. Stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you today.
Nun Gesser muttered, Amen. A few echoed him. Unsteadily, he began to sing, A mighty fortress is our God. Some joined, their words trailing raggedly behind the simple tune.
Johann looked at Christiana, her head on Ursula Bauer's shoulder, tears again tracking down her cheek. Her arms were folded over Walter, his head under the cape. The fever had first struck him, the younger one, but he recovered swiftly. They had thought Peter would get better too.
When the singing ended, Johann and Fritz lifted Peter. The bundle weighed so little, even with ballast rocks knotted into the shroud.
Johann nodded. They stepped on a platform that the sailors placed next to the rail for burials.
Johann nodded again. They tipped the blanket. The small body, bundled in the coarsest linen, slid out.
Johann barely heard it enter the sea. He kept his eyes on the water, away from Christiana's eyes. Then he closed his eyes and said farewell. Through his last year in the army, during drills and on sentry duty, and through all the dreary business of soldiering, Johann had talked to Peter in his mind, telling him things that Johann had learned and that a boy should know, that a father should teach him. When he got home, Johann called Peter his little soldier. But Christiana said not to do that. She said she was not making soldiers for the Landgraf to rent out to fight other people's wars.
Johann had minded when she said that, because a soldier, even a rented soldier, could be a man of honor and duty, but he had said nothing. Her father had land, so her brothers never had to be soldiers. The Oberstrasses of Kettenheim had no land, so Johann, orphaned early and shuttled from uncle to cousin to aunt, became a soldier for the Landgraf. She only said that once. Christiana was no nag, but it lingered and grew in Johann's head. He had always thought his Dienst, his faithfulness to duty, even to the Landgraf, was the best part of him. But what she said made him less certain. He made up his mind to no longer be a soldier, not one who is hired out to kill for another man's profit. Going to America, leaving behind all they knew and all that Johann had been, boiled down to those words. No more soldiers for the Landgraf. A crosswave slammed him against the rail, lifting him up on his toes. He looked down at the white and green water. A hand gripped his arm, holding him. Fritz was staring at him, concern on his long, hoarse face.
Yes, Johann said. Yes, it is not my time.
Johann realized that Fritz was holding the blanket in his other hand. Johann had let it go.
Johann straightened and blinked. They stepped off the platform as two sailors reached to move it away.
Johann sat on the deck with Christiana and Walter, their back against the chest that held extra ropes. The spot, out of the traffic of busy sailors, offered some shelter from the wind. He opened his coat so she could lean inside its warmth.
Walter was very good, he said.
He felt her head nod. She had been quiet over the last few hours. When they saw life leaving Peter, she had shrieked, screams from another world, then sobs that became goose-like honks, mucus streaming from her nose. Walter joined her wailing.
Johann couldn't comfort a baby who heard such sounds from his own mother. There was no comfort. Johann didn't know how long the screaming and sobs lasted. He had been lost in them. It was madness. Madness that terrified him. He had longed to leave the dark hold where their sleeping space was. To get out in the air, but Christiana wouldn't move. Not away from Peter. So he had stayed.
I'm cold, Christiana said.
We can go below.
No, the air there. Walter needs clean air, even if it's cold.
The weather on the sea is no better than back home.
They fell quiet, lulled by the ship's plunging and the wind song in the rigging. Johann lost track of time until Walter began to stir, his soft noises knifing through the ship's background din. Gray light slanted from the west, from beyond the ship's bow.
We must eat, he said. All of us.
I am not hungry,
she said, her voice husky, near a whisper.
You must eat, so that Walter may eat.
He helped her up. They were nearing the end of their own supplies. Soon they would have to eat ship's rations. They would be charged for every scrap, probably for much they never received. Without Peter, their food might go farther. The thought brought Johann shame. Peter was such a little fellow. Johann led them down the steps of the hatch, descending into the fetid warmth of too many bodies crammed too close together. The stink hit like a slap. His gorge rose. He fought the instinct to hold his breath. He tried to take air through his mouth as he wove around people and piles of belongings that loomed in the dark, ducking his head under the ship's crossbeams. Hammocks hung from the ceiling, some occupied, some not. Here, for once, his lack of height was an advantage. He steered Christiana to the rear corner that they had made theirs, clinging to a shred of privacy, but no more. Christiana sat with her back to the cabin, Indian style, and let Walter wobble on his stumpy legs. A shiver passed through her as she redraped her cape, then reached into the sack for their remaining food. Except there was no food. She peered in to be sure, then told Johann. He repeated the investigation of the sack, finding only a cloth, four spoons, and a cup for drinking. He took a moment and breathed once, hard. Christiana closed her eyes. He sank to his knees and ran his hands twice through each of the three sacks that held the things they had taken from their chest, which was stowed away. He found only his second shirt, Christiana's second apron and dress, a few rags for Walter, nothing to eat. He searched through the blankets that were folded and piled, refolding each. Then he did it all again. Blood pounded at his temples. The food, the cheese and biscuits and salt fish, was gone. His brain felt slow. It happened during the service. Peter's funeral. Who could do such a thing? Without thinking, he patted his shirt for the pouch that hung from a leather cord around his neck. Their money. Still there. He sat back on his hams and pressed a hand over his face. Rage flooded through him. The Lord would be hard on such a thief. The Lord would impose his justice. That was what he did for the Israelites so long ago. But waiting for someone else's justice, even the Lord's, wasn't Johann's way. If he couldn't be bothered to save Peter, he would be little use for this. Johann thought of his bayonet. That weapon, plus his greatcoat and his soldier's boots, were what he had to show for 15 years in the army. In the high troops, a despicable crime like this would bring 500 stripes with a stout stick. Some sergeants would make the thief run the gauntlet a dozen times. Johann didn't like the brutality of the gauntlet, but theft is a serious crime, one that undermines fellow feeling. Johann reached into the smallest of the sacks. His fingers found the bayonet's rough metal socket. He unwrapped the weapon and slipped it into his coat pocket. He looked down the length of the great cabin, dimly lit by an occasional candle and small pools of bright where hatches opened to the deck. Families sagged in listless groups, some in hammocks, some on the deck. A few children ran here and there, mostly for the pleasure of moving. Even for the healthy, the voyage was dreary days and nights, wedged into the cabin with 200 others. Johann's suspicions for the theft fastened on two passengers. He had never liked their looks. They pushed in front of others and complained. He knew he should keep an open mind about who the thief was. Thieves, good ones, don't look like thieves. Maybe, he wondered, he was a crew member. They were a rough-looking group, living a dangerous life with few comforts. Most seemed to view the passengers with a mix of contempt and resentment. His rage was subsiding. He had no way to find the thief. If anyone saw the theft, they should have told him by now. It wasn't the army, and Johann wasn't a sergeant here. He had no power to inspect the possessions of others, looking for the missing food. Food all looks alike anyway. How could he tell a bit of cheese was their bit of cheese? He would have to leave it to the Lord's justice. Still, Johann would keep his eyes open, see what turned up. He rewrapped the bayonet and put it back in the sack, then took a cup to the water barrel. He drank and brought more back for Christiana. Walter was climbing on his mother's folded legs, then burrowed into her bosom.
You keep me warm, don't you? She said to the baby, then drank.
The food was definitely gone, Johann said. They would have to eat ship's rations. Hardtack, plus a little salt pork. She nodded and said,
We knew this would come.
You must eat, he said. You and Walter. You must become fat and strong.
They moved to lean their backs against the ship's wall. He spread a blanket over her. With Walter at her breast, she fell asleep. Until this voyage, Christiana would never have sat so boldly against him where others might see, a baby in her blouse. He had admired her sense of propriety, but that was an early casualty of the crowding on shipboard, where passengers ate and slept, dressed and performed personal acts, all under the gaze of others. In a few days, the close quarters had dissolved the habits of a lifetime. Some of Christiana's auburn hair had escaped from her cap and lay against her cheek. Her skin was pale in the half-light. Her smile could startle him with its brilliance, but her mouth fell into a hard set when she rested. Her face turned stony, that of a stranger. From the talk of other men, he knew he was lucky in his wife. Christiana didn't gossip, she didn't carp, and she comforted him in the way that a man needs a woman to do. He shook his head to stop his tears. She and Walter had no need for a weeping man. One of Christiana's hands shielded Walter's head. Her hands had reddened and toughened. They were still only when she slept. She had stopped knitting when Walter first fell ill, then while Peter suffered. Johann would have to check that the knitting needles, good ones from pig bones, were still there. Snatches of song came down through the deck. Above, at the ship's stern, the evening prayer group was meeting. He could hear Nungesser's uncertain tenor above the others. When Christiana claimed this spot in the cabin, they hadn't known it would let them hear the singing. Christiana liked it. She clutched his shirt with one hand.
Want to go up to listen? He asked.
No, not tonight.
I'll help you into the hammock.
Let's stay here. Walter can sleep here.
It was awkward. One of the ship's planks pressed hard against his ribs, but he stayed where he was. His breathing slowed, but he didn't sleep. When he closed his eyes, he saw Peter fall to the water, so he opened them again. Chapter 2 Johann snored softly. Moaning came from halfway across the cabin, where the Drexlers nursed two children with fever. Christiana heard more pain sounds from another direction. She didn't know from which family. She felt weak, jittery, balanced on some unstable edge, her mind roaming through dark and sad places. It was barely one day since Peter died. Or was it two? Time lost its shape in this gloomy space. However long it had been, now she could think of Peter's name, have him in her thoughts, without reeling from the scorching flame of losing him. There was still a stab, an urge to cry out, but it didn't consume her. It left room for her. Her mother had warned about the sea and its terrors, its storms and its shipwrecks, its pirates and its diseases. Peter might have died even if they had never left their village, though he had always seemed strong. It was Walter who struggled more in his first months. Yet Walter shrugged off the fever that stole Peter away. Perhaps that meant that Walter was meant for some special purpose. She would like that. She knew her mother prayed for them, even without knowing about the boys' fevers. Christiana had never found much solace in church rituals. That was something she and Johann shared. She wished that prayer would help her now, or help Johann, since they might find peace for Peter wherever he was. Did he still float in the water? Had he reached the ocean bottom? Had some sea brute made a meal of him? A sob tore through her, and she clutched the baby. Johann started. Through tears, she shushed them both. She knew her thoughts were bad, but what could she do? No Bible readings or pastor's sermon ever kept away her bad thoughts. She was with child again, she was certain, though she had said nothing about it. Before Peter sickened, she hadn't wanted Johann to worry about her. He worried enough. She valued that. A man without worries is a fool who brings only sorrow. Yet she tried to protect Johann from some worries, ones he could do nothing about. And there was no reason to tell him this, after Peter. When this new baby's time came, they would either be safe in America, or they would be with Peter, below the waves. She dropped her head close enough to feel Walter's breath on her face. Her mind slipped away again. She thought of having babies and then burying them, or casting them into the sea. She saw herself doing it again and again. Peter had been part of her, but then no longer, and now he was gone. She couldn't see him now, not ever again. She wiped her face with a corner of the blanket. An empty feeling opened inside. She placed her hand over her stomach. It was too early to feel the baby. She was too thin. How many times could she give herself away to a baby? Then watch what had been part of her, what she still felt to be part of her, die. How soon would there be nothing left of her? Her mother had been rough with her brothers, angry when they did something reckless or foolish, when they treated so thoughtlessly the life that had cost her dearly to give them. "Don't expect me to weep at the grave of such a fool," her mother would say, as though a mother could choose how much grief she would feel when her child was gone. It had been Christiana's idea to go to America. Johann thought it was his. When she accepted him as her husband, she had admired his bearing, the respect he commanded as a common man who rose to be sergeant, a man with Dienst. Her father had questioned the match. Johann had no land, and Christiana wasn't bad to look at. She knew.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?